Hello, Blazers. Welcome to episode 121 of UAB Green and Told, original debut Monday, April 8th, 2024. Through this podcast, we're able to share stories from members of the UAB community. Take a listen back to past episodes at alumni.uab.edu/greenandtold on Spotify or the Apple Podcast app. And while there, leave a written review so more alums can discover us. I'm Greg Berry, a UAB alum and Director of Communications in the Office of Alumni Affairs. A lot goes into picking a college to attend. Academic reputation, graduation rates, financial assistance, a new car. Okay, so UAB doesn't exactly give away new cars for potential students, but for today's podcast guest, Marvin Lee, that's exactly what enticed him to enroll.
She said, because I don't have to pay, you can live at the house and don't have a dorm, you can get a car. So I'm like, car? So.
Plus, Marvin will reveal what led him into comedy. Yes, comedy.
Less than 15 minutes later, Mr. Johnson, the guy who was hiring me, was escorted out of the building in handcuffs.
But that's not all. This UAB alum hit it big in a post-apocalyptic horror drama you may have heard of. You know, The Walking Dead.
He said, have you lost your mind? And I go, what? He said, do you know how big that show is? He said, that show is huge worldwide.
Let's face it, Marvin Lee Oldham II doesn't just fall off the lips, does it? Chances are you've never heard of Marvin Oldham, but for Marvin Lee, well, he's made a name for himself. From his comedic stage performances to his work on The Walking Dead, Marvin Lee has made a name for himself in showbiz, finalist for NBC's Last Comic Standing, featured performer for Funny Fest 2009, and winner of the Long Beach Comedy Festival. Marvin's made that name. But did you know he's a UAB alum from the outskirts of Birmingham?
Grew up in Birmingham, right near Hueytown and Pleasant Grove. So high school actually went to Pleasant Grove. And I remember we used to go places and I would tell everybody I was from Hueytown because back then, Hueytown, at least in that little area of town, was the cool school, and Pleasant Grove was kind of like the little nerdy school. So, but yeah, Pleasant Grove High School, and then went from Pleasant Grove. Graduated, went to South Alabama for one quarter.
Okay.
Hated it. Literally hated it. And packed up because they had a paper mill down in Mobile. And it was a beautiful campus. But man, I said, I never had a smell wake me up. It was so bad. And then I came back here and then my mother gave me an option. She said, well, I'll tell you what, since you're back here, if you decide to go to UAB, which was a choice of mine. She said, because I don't have to pay, you can live at the house and don't have a dorm, you can get a car. So I'm like, car? So besides wanting to, you know, go to school and I knew a lot of other people, I got a car in the deal. So I was ready. So, yep.
What kind of kid were you growing up?
It was really easy for me to associate, with a lot of like the white kids in school and really able to associate with the black kids in school. It wasn't really an issue of black kids, white kids. It was more of just kind of cultural things, you know, things that would just kind of go, you know, some people, you know, we had, you know, back in the 80s, a lot of the heavy metal, long hair, rocker band, you know, like this. And yeah. Then you had a lot of the, at that time, that wasn't as mainstream as now, the hip hop culture or whatever. So there was a lot of cultural differences, and I was able to kind of, you know, because of my family background, kind of like float in between. So one of the things I said later on in some of my comedy shows that I became like the ambassador between all of the races and stuff. But, so I was pretty fortunate. I was, like I said, I was fortunate with everybody. You know, I was friends with everybody. I could kind of go back and forth.
Because you're basically, your background is you're a melting pot.
Yeah, I always tell people the official story with my family is Black, American, Indian, Irish. You got some Latino, some other things that kind of thrown in there. It was a true melting pot. I always try to tell people I always felt like I was friends with everybody, but I wasn't, because of that, I wasn't close to anybody.
You went the PR route officially. Through the eyes of UAB, its communications major through the College of Arts and Sciences, but you also had a minor in art studio. So you kept that artistic side throughout your days at UAB.
You know, the whole idea was I wanted to get a job at a big time advertising agency. I said, hey, I can dress cool or whatever. And I also wanted to be a double threat because I said, okay, I'm a natural artist. I've always been, as far as actually drawing, painting, that kind of stuff. But I was always good at being a writer, coming up with concepts. I was so good in public relations and my marketing class. They would say, oh, write a concept or write an advertisement. I would write it like an hour before class and get an A+. All of that is how I wound up getting into stand-up comedies, which is surprising. So I graduated and I got an interview at an advertising agency somewhere in Birmingham. So I go in and I interview great and everything. Everything's good. I'm on that path, you know, first job or whatever like this. And so the guy goes, hey, you're great. It's getting late. You're hired, but basically come in a few days and you'll do your paperwork, your tax information, whatever like that. I'm like, oh, okay, good. And I'm all happy telling folks, hey, I graduated college. I got this job in marketing, public relations. So 2 days later, I go in, and I don't remember the guy's name. I'll just say something like Mr. Johnson. So I walk in, and I walk into the lobby, and I said, I'm here to see Mr. Johnson. You know, I'm here to do my paperwork. And the receptionist just froze. She had this look. And she's like, hold on. And then she reaches down. She never took her eyes off me. She reaches down on the intercom thing and said, we have somebody here to see Mr. Johnson. And you could hear it was like some rustling going on and everything. She said, just have a seat. And I sit there. And about less than 15 minutes later, Mr. Johnson, the guy who was hiring me, was escorted out of the building in handcuffs.
Whoa.
It was a detective and a plainclothes police. I'm sitting in the lobby and he walks out. And he looks at me and goes, how you doing, Marvin? And I go, hey. And so they walk out. And so I walk up to the reception. And I say, hey, look. I don't know what's going on with that. I said, I just got hired for a job and I'm just here. I don't know what's going on, but I just, and they go, yeah, well, you know, things are a bit of a turmoil right about now. So we'll see who you need to talk to. And they kept going back and forth and they was like, we're not sure. And I was talking to this person. It was just, and so I kept calling back a few days later and I didn't get that job.
So what did you do coming out of that?
And so I started looking for another job. And so what happened is, you know, I got an interview for another place 2-3 weeks later when I go in and the guy goes, I remember his name. His name was Martin. Same thing. Everything's going good. You know, bright eyed, bushy tail. And he says, OK, well, I'll tell you what, why don't you come back in a few days later and we can fill out all your paperwork. I said, no, you know, I can fill it out right now. He said, no, that's just you're good. I'm like, I would really like to just go ahead and fill that paperwork out. He said, nah, we got to come and go. So again, 2 days later, I come in and I fill out the paperwork. I say, I'm here to fill out the paperwork with Mr. Martin. And they go, oh, well, he's not here. And I go, oh, OK, well, he told me to show up, so I guess I don't need to see him. Just who's ever in charge of human resources, just fill out my tax information with it. They said, well, because he hired you, we really like to kind of keep it with that person going through the process and then sign. I said, well, okay, well, when is he going to be here? And they go, well, they said he took off for a few days for personal leave. And I said, so call me back on, that was on the Wednesday. They said, call me back on a Friday. I said, okay. So I called back on Friday. I said, I need to speak to Mr. Martin. I got hired on Monday. And they go, yeah, you know, he's still off. What? I mean, is he okay? And they say, we don't know. He just called in and said, you know, he still needs some time off or whatever. I was like, okay. I call that Monday. Then I call Wednesday. And finally she said, as of right now, he's on administrative leave. I don't know any details. He never came back. So that was job number two.
Yeah. Which now, job number two that you didn't even have.
I've got hired twice. I just haven't gotten on the payroll yet.
Yeah.
Third time I go into other companies. Now I'm gonna be honest. I'm a little cynical about it.
Don't blame you.
Yeah, and so I go in and I interview with this other guy. He said, yeah. Basically in a nutshell, he said, well, if you're such hot stuff, why haven't you got hired yet? You know, kind of a thing. And I said, well, I have been hired twice. And he said, yeah. And he said, who? And so I told him about the first situation, I told him about the agency. I said, I got hired by Mr. Johnson or whatever at XYZ's average. They said, oh, yeah, we heard about it. I said, yeah, I was there the day they arrested him. And he said, we heard about that. Oh, man, you know, we heard about Johnson. I said, tell me all about it. So I started telling them about what happened. And they start bringing all of these other people from out of the office into their office. So I'm interviewing with this guy. And they said, hey, so come on here. Like, hey. This guy, he was there the day they fired, the day Johnson got arrested. And so they were bringing other people in. And I was turning around and I was telling them the little story. And then they say, okay, so what happened after that? So then I tell them about getting hired by this other agency, about this Mr. Martin. He said, come here, hey, say, yeah, you know, with Martin. And so I promise you, I had about a group of about 15 people sitting in his office, just sitting everywhere they go. And it was like, and I was telling them my little adventure stories about, you know, me trying to get this job, and they were falling out laughing. And I was going, you know, they're laughing, but I need a job. You know, I was like, and I said, man, shoot, I said, the way they're laughing, I ought to turn around and, you know, maybe I ought to get a job at the comedy club or whatever. And so the start on the comedy club that was there, we had a big snowstorm and burned down. And so right at the time we're talking 93, Bruce Ayers and the whole group decided to buy the Stardome where it is now. And they're getting ready to have this big grand reopening. I was still looking for a job, you know, because the guy told me he wanted to hire me, but he said, you know, we don't have a spot right now. We're just looking. He said, we'll keep you in mind or whatever. But at least nobody died or arrested that third time. So the Stardome was getting ready to open. And I just said, well, hey, let me just get a job, you know, like a part-time job somewhere, you know, waiters or something to keep the money flowing until I find a quote unquote real job. But they said, well, we really need somebody who's really good at talking to people and, you know, dealing with situations. And they said, so I got hired by them. And so I started working at the Stardome, and, you know, big events would come through and I started working. So I started learning more about the comedy business, just being there. I would literally sit down and watch every time. Like, unless I had something to go, I would sit down and watch the shows. And so I started seeing things of routine. I started seeing techniques. I started seeing different little things from that. Over a period of time, I was doing that. Then they put me in charge of running the open mic night when they had it. And it just kind of went from there. And, you know, I started saying, hey, I'm funny. I want to go on stage. And Mrs. Ayers, I used to have Mrs. Ayers just falling out laughing. She said, Marvin, you're going to make me pee on myself. I'm like, okay, I'm good with the boss lady, whatever. But Bruce, he said, Marvin, I got plenty of comics. He's like, I need you doing this, what you do. You're good at this work here, but I want to do, you know, I still like comedy. And so I start branching out, you know, you go from Birmingham to Atlanta and start going a little further out. And the further I got out, the more people were laughing because they just say, hey, he's a comedian. And so I just start branching out from there, you know, just me trying to get a job in public relations from UAB graduating is like how I got into stand-up comedy. I didn't say one day, hey, let me be a comedian. It's like, I didn't have anything better to do. And so I would just tell these stories and people would laugh.
When you were at the Stardome, who are some of the acts that just kind of really drew you in and you're like, you know what? That's who I want to be.
At the Stardome, one of my biggest influences was probably George Wallace. And one of the comedians that also came through there, and it was kind of a love-hate relationship, was a comedian by the name of Carlos Mencia. I liked how in your face bold he was. Like, he would, like, oh yes, like he would argue, oh, you know, you do this, you don't like this. But I also knew behind the scenes that Carlos Mencia stole a lot of comedians' material, and that's just, you know, that's just, you just don't do that. But like, the comedian that influenced me, the one that was like made me go bam, this is it, was Sinbad. And I actually had three encounters with Sinbad. The first time, the one that made me do it is when I also had a part-time job. You know those cologne models that you see at the mall that you don't want people spraying you and stuff like this? Well, they're working for an agency doing different things. So one of the things I was doing is I was working a college booth, and I went down there. And so after it was over, I was supposed to get paid $150 that day for work running the booth. So when I get down there, at the end of the day, they said, oh, we got a little issue. We can only pay you $75. We're going to give you $75 in tickets to see Sinbad. I love Sinbad. He's like, you know, at that time, he was like the comic, you know, and everything. Mm-hmm. To be honest, I really would rather just had $150. They said, well, we can give you $75 tickets to see Sinbad, or we can give you $75, you know? So I was like, okay, so I will be taking my Sinbad tickets. And I'm watching the show and I'm thinking about my $75 I'm not getting. And Sinbad comes out and it was packed. Everywhere was packed. And he came out and he did the most unbelievable performance. You know, I'm new to this. So I'm looking at it purely from a spectator standpoint. Unbelievable show. And what I noticed is black people, white people, old people, young people, people across, Everybody was enjoying the show. Everybody was listening. And so when the show was over, he walked off stage. I literally stood up right there in front of my chair. I said, this is what I want to do for a living. Turned around, walked out the door, and hadn't looked back. Then Sinbad came to UAB, and I had a chance to see him at my college and that thing. And it just kind of reaffirmed that same type of feeling. And then the last thing, I actually had a chance to interview him when I was working at when I graduated. I did get a job at Magic 96, where at that time it was Robin Shannon, and I was hired not because I had a degree in marketing and public relations. I was hired as a comedian.
At what point of your fledgling young career would you point to and say, you know what, that was my big break? That is when I truly became a comedian.
One day I was working at the Stardome, and then what happens is a lot of times they would have a after-hour comedy show in the back room for the open micers, this little thing. So I was coming out, and I had kind of been burned up about the idea. And these group of guys come in and say, hey, Marvin Lee. They said, yeah, hey, we're thinking about, sticking around. And so I go into the back room and say, hey, can I do some time tonight? Can I get on stage? You know, no, we got too many people over. And I was like, oh. So I go and tell these group of guys, I say, hey, man, they're not going to let me up on stage to do any jokes or whatever. And they go, oh, well, we were going to go back there to watch you. But, you know, if you're not going on, we'll go home. And when Rex heard that group of people who still had money in their pocket willing to go on, he said, oh, no, Marvin's going on stage. But that was a crucial moment. That's when I realized, was open micers, you're basically there to learn how to do comedy. You're not really contributing. But once I sat there and I said, no, I'm contributing to these people making money. These people are going to leave. Now I'm allowed to be on stage because I'm making this club money. When I got a really nice break on The Walking Dead, and that opportunity happened once I started doing that show. I remember booking this corporate event, and the guy was a really big fan of The Walking Dead. I didn't know it, but he said, hey, I hear you did you were on The Walking Dead. And I sent him some stuff, and I was like, yeah. And just by that very nature of being on that show, I was able to charge $500 more than I could to charge any. And I'm like, and that was just me throwing it. They were willing to pay it because I was on the show.
How did you get that gig on The Walking Dead? Because here you are, you're a comedian, you make people laugh, and then you say all you're doing is walking around and running away from people. So how did that come to fruition?
There was this sub movie where I was trying to be one of the guys on the airplane. The airplane was getting ready to be attacked or crashed or something, and there was a role that I was going for. And the guy calls me, and I was like, oh, I got the role for the airplane. He goes, oh, what? Anyway, forget all about that. He said, Marvin, I've got these people who saw your picture, they're interested in you on The Walking Dead. And I was like, what? I was like, nah, I'm not really, okay. I mean, if I can't get the airplane, he's like, oh, okay. I turned The Walking Dead down three times. Because at first, and to keep in mind, I was thinking they want me to run down there being a zombie. I'm like, I don't want to crawl around with all that prosthetic makeup on and hot. So I was on the other sets. And I said, yeah, man, these people asking me about doing The Walking Dead. I don't want to go. He said, have you lost your mind? And I go, what? He said, do you know how big that show is? He said, that show is huge worldwide. He said, I've traveled to other countries and people have recognized me for my little piece of something on the show. I said, really? He said, yeah. I said, it's really something. He said, yeah. He's like, I can't believe how stupid you are. And I was like, oh, God. I said, well, if I ever get a fourth chance, I'll make sure I take it. And so the guy called me back and he said, hey, Marvin, they got this thing on The Walking Dead. He said, I'll take it.
That's Marvin Lee. In 1993, Marvin graduated from the College of Arts and Sciences, majoring in communication studies with a minor in art history. While he may crack jokes for a living, Marvin can get serious and has a great idea of what it means to be a Blazer.
For me, to be a Blazer, more than anything, it means the opportunity. You have an opportunity to be more than who you are. You have an opportunity to find out more than you thought you knew. is opportunity. That more than anything else, you are able to look up and say, hey, I never knew this existed, or I could do this. And I think, you know, that was the biggest profound thing when I left high school to go to UAB.
Be sure to check out past episodes of the UAB Green and Told podcast. Listen in at alumni.uab.edu/greenandtold. Have a story to share or know someone who does? Email greenandtold@uab.edu. Finally, be sure to follow us on social media. Just search UAB Alumni on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thanks for listening, and until next time, go Blazers!